Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back to Reclaiming the Republic. And we are giving you all of the necessary facts, the academic evidence as to what the framers would do if they were here today. Because why? And how can I say this? Because they actually did something when the federal government went adrift and started violating the Constitution. And as we see today, we can prove, and that's what this show is all about, constantly proving how unconstitutional many of the things that the federal government is doing that the states have never delegated. This is why we believe that this is the most important radio show on the existence of this planet, because we're exposing you to the facts. I'm not an entertainer. I'm not here to entertain you. I'm here to give you the unvarnished truth regarding what's going on with our government and what it's going to take if you want to save your liberty as well as the Constitution. Because once one is gone, there's a symbiotic relationship between our liberty here in America and that Constitution. In other words, there is a mutually dependent relationship between our Constitution and our individual liberty. And that is basically due to our founding documents, that the Constitution being derived from the paradigm that was established, the bedrock that was laid out in the Declaration of Independence, that we are endowed by our Creator inalienable rights, of those being life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that these things cannot be taken from us. And so what else more do I have to say, folks? This show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org. And let me give you, you know, because sometimes it's always negative and bad and so forth. Let me give you some silver lining to what's really going on. And the silver lining really has a lot to do with the fact that Trump did not get elected. We are getting a sample. We are actually tasting a sample of what the tyranny and how harsh the jackbooted thugs of government can be. And they're just beginning to show their iron fist under the velvet glove, as though they have not delivered the fatal blows upon us yet. You have the ability to get your states. So I'm going to back up. I'm going to stop real quick. Or actually, I'm going to try to give you a broader perspective really quick. Because there's lots of people that want to know, what can we do? What is it that we can actually engage that will stop D.C. and this communist takeover of government that has occurred in D.C.? Well, of course, getting Trump back into the presidency would be another breather. But the problem is that the Trump effect, too many people in America, when we get a president, because they believe that we have kings, because they don't understand the Constitution, and these presidents actually have the ego of thinking that they are a king, when they are the public servants that are actually supposed to be defending the Constitution and executing the Constitution and only the Constitution. So now we have a good idea of just how bad these tyrants are going to get. And if you think Biden is bad, wait till Harris takes over because of the 25th Amendment? Anyway, the fact is that whoever is wearing that, or whoever's at the mantle of power of the seat of the presidency from the Democratic Communist Party, and basically it's a front for the Chinese Communist Party, whoever is at that mantle, they will rain fury and death and destruction upon those who oppose them. And they've already been making the argument, and they've been making the sell, that constitutionalists and patriots, those who support the Constitution and those who support individual liberty and the supreme law of the land, well, They're the biggest threats. We are the biggest threats. This is why I kind of started in, you know, not necessarily bragging, but I am public enemy number one, because there is no one else that understands. And I hate to say that, I really, because there's lots of people that understand it, but there are probably there's no one else that's willing to take the stand on doing the right thing. There's no one else that is actually leading and putting their lives and putting themselves in jeopardy. We need everybody to do this. As a matter of fact, I was talking to some kids, and some kids, you know, were really not happy with the way they're being monitored and with the spying from the CIA. And we're talking high school kids out in a conservative area, because they understand what's going on and how wrong it is with NSA and the government spying on them and so forth. And I said, just imagine what would happen if there was a moment like a flash mob. You know, there's these organized flash mobs that, you know, that have occurred, like in Philadelphia is a good example. They would literally go into a retailer, and there would be hundreds of kids that would go into that retailer. They would just grab clothes and stuff off of the shelves and walk right out. You know, they would be staged and ready to go to steal what they wanted, and they would just walk right out, because there was no way that the store had the security at that point to stop that surge of crime. Now, not talking about crime, but talking about free speech. What would happen if all of a sudden millions of kids and millions of people, and we're talking 100 million people maybe, that, you know, are willing to exercise the right of the freedom of expression and just literally state, you know, because bottom line, if you caveat your comment to say Joe Biden should hang once he's found guilty of treason, and put that out there, because that right there would be a huge flag to NSA, Secret Service, and everybody else, and they would be overwhelmed by that kind of outcry. And so, is that a threat? Well, technically it's not, because bottom line, we're talking about having this man tried for treason and then saying basically when he's found guilty of treason, he should hang. But boy, they don't like that. But that hurts their feelings. And you know me, I'm all about feelings. Again, I am not a professional entertainer. I am here to help give you the understanding so that you can help get involved in the process and solution. So, getting back to the silver lining, if these red states, South Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, if these state legislatures actually demanded that their attorney general get involved in this lawsuit against Biden, or actually it's the lawsuit against Trump, not Trump, sorry. It's the petition that we did, we've talked about at the beginning of the year, and it's the lawsuit that Bob Schultz and We the People Foundation have, and it's out actually on our petition page on reclaimingtherepublic.org. So that's where all the facts are. But if the state attorney generals engaged in this lawsuit, if we had two, and the more the merrier, because if we get a lot of attorney generals engaged in this one lawsuit, it would create such a distraction at the government level that would force the Supreme Court, especially. So if it's only two attorney generals, the Supreme Court would only look at, you know, okay, this is a very small fraction. And they're all about statistics, census, numbers, and they would not feel overwhelmed to probably step in to say, you know what, we have to guard the Constitution because the people demand it. If we had 13, 14, 15 state attorney generals that demanded that the Supreme Court engage in this lawsuit, they would take it on, and I'm telling you, they would take it on and actually force Congress to select the proper president. Because especially as more and more states start saying, you know what, we're going to get involved. Because they are, the Supreme Court, they're not dumb. These guys understand that there is a movement that we are rejecting this unconstitutional idiot, the Biden administration, and what he is doing, and understand the fact that he has been unconstitutionally selected or chosen, and he is creating a constitutional crisis. Because everything he is signing is illegitimate because he's not a constitutional president. He has not been chosen by the constitutional process. He was chosen by unconstitutional electors. And that's the truth. That's the bottom line. And the only way for us to have a constitutional president is to follow the 12th Amendment for Congress to actually select the president. Now, see, here's the real problem. And actually, you can kind of see the real truth of where Congress has sided. There is a possibility that Trump may not get selected, even though in the House of Representatives, one would say, you know, it should be a slam dunk, Republicans versus Democrats. But we are already seeing how Liz Cheney is not a Republican. She's a globalist. She is a part of the communist movement. She does not care about the Constitution. The lips that may actually utter the word Constitution that's on her face is deceiving everybody because she has no regard for that document. And every time I hear any politician regard or use in context the Constitution, I am telling you they are lying, they are being deceitful, and they are giving people the impression that they kind of know what they're talking about when the only thing they know is what they have to do. They are managing an agenda. And this is why we have to reclaim the Republic in all of these different things. It's more than just Republic Review, and we do have ways of getting involved. We'll be right back. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. So, as you can tell, I'm kind of rushing, and I'm trying to, you know, be hasty in saying some things because I really want to get through this so I can get to the content. But what I have to say is actually pretty important. And so what's really, really, really important is that I kind of give you some context. So I had a conversation. I have a weekly conversation with different people. And so the chair of the Constitution Party of one of the states, he or she, I had a conversation with. And the question that came to me is, what is it that the states can do? And so I really, you know, because what happens is we get so zoomed in on different problems. We get so distracted on the problem du jour, whether that be the, let's just say, whether that be the immigration crisis, whether that be this, you know, the banning of guns or taking of guns or going after patriots. I mean, all these different things that we're seeing coming out of the Biden administration. Well, it's important to try to understand that there are things that we can do. We're, you know, I'm telling you that there are so many people in South Dakota, this sawmill and the shutting down of the timber industry in South Dakota is huge. It's going to unemploy a lot of people, and not just unemploy a lot of people. It's going to economically impact a lot of people. When you take a small state, let's just say there's 1 million people in South Dakota. And let's just say you affect the direct income of a portion of that. Let's just say 100,000 is 10%. 50,000 is 5%, right? And so, you know, 10,000 being 1%. And so when you take 1 or 2 or 3% of that, and even though you may not look at 1 million being a big number, it is a big number. And when you look at how 20, 30,000 people would be directly affected by the shutting down of timber, and that's only on the probably on the milling side and the support of the lumber products that come out of that. That is not including, you know, the actual people that go in and cut the lumber and move that lumber to the mills. I mean, there's lots of direct jobs that are involved in the lumber industry and harvesting lumber. And so when we put this into, quantify this, let's just take 5%. Let's just say 5% of the direct income of people within South Dakota are going to be affected. Well, how does that affect the indirect percent? Well, how many of these people are going to be able to go and, you know, get a dinner out at a restaurant, obtain the services that they need to, you know, because they're not getting paid. They're going to have to look for a different job, maybe a job that doesn't pay well, a job that, you know, doesn't require their skills that they have. And what happens when all of a sudden they are successful in killing these markets? Because these are actual work labor markets. Now, I'm not saying that the service industry isn't a labor market, but it is not a skilled labor market. When you go to work and you're a waitress or what have you, I understand that some people think that you know, it's like a first responder. They're really providing, and they are providing a service. But it's not like if they make a mistake, they could get killed because that tree could fall on them. That chain could actually snap if they're not maintaining their tools. I mean, the ramifications of skilled labor and the pay that they make is a lot different than the services market. And so I just want to impress upon you that the impact of allowing the government to unconstitutionally shut down markets in these red states to destroy their economy is huge. And so these things are happening that you don't even see, that aren't even blips on your news. And so what I'm trying not to do is any marketing here. What we're trying to do is actually do some content, and I'm going to get into the content. But I want to let you know that there are things that you can actually do, things that will actually help while we unite together by not doing the nullification and or secession stuff. But we can save this. We can save this republic and the Constitution by working together. And one of the big things that every state can do in getting your state legislatures to understand this lawsuit, understand that Congress has failed to respond legally to a charge that they have violated the Constitution, and we're requesting to go to default to the Supreme Court, that the Supreme Court forces Congress to do their job. And what I would like to also convince Bob to do is also ask the Supreme Court to remove every member of Congress who has failed, who basically accepted this unconstitutional electoral college because they violated their oath of office. And in accordance with Section 3, they should be removed and banned. I'd love to see that. It doesn't matter what party these people are, but we know what party is doing that. But there are Republicans that actually accepted the unconstitutional electors. Folks, here's one thing you can get involved in that can actually make a huge difference and help awaken the rest of America, that we've got this thing that's not a dead letter. It's called the Constitution, and it still is the supreme law of the land. And the only way we're going to get that is to start using it. We are suffering from constitutional atrophy because nobody is exercising their powers and authorities at the state level. This is why we got to get these states to start exercising their muscles and developing their strength and developing their talents and skills in using this Constitution. So anyway, hopefully that helps. I gave you some insight as how this came to be or why I'm talking about this. And so what I really need to do, and I probably need to promise everybody, that what we should do is create a boilerplate of things that you can actually do to start forcing the federal government and following the Constitution. The immigration is one of the issues. The seating or the choosing of the president, that's another issue. There are plenty of issues that the states and the attorney generals that are enumerated within the Constitution that the federal government is failing to do. Then we can hold them accountable without having to go down the path of what some people are calling nullification, these other things, but they would lead us to the interposition. It's in supporting this collective effort, it helps create this association, it helps create the bond of the union in interposing, which is exactly what we need to do. This is why we're going through these documents, to understand we don't want to nullify, we don't want to go out and create anarchy as states go down their different paths. We need to convince the states that they need to start working together, that collectively they have more power than they've ever imagined. And we now have a point in time where they either measure up and do their job, or we will rue the day and they will have blood on their hands. Those that are sitting at that mantle at the state legislature power at this current time, and as the time moves forward to when the federal government sets aside the Constitution and actually tries to destroy us and subjugate us to the global communist movement, I'm telling you, those folks at the state legislatures will have blood on their hands. So that being said, we have a comment line, 425-270-5416. And Harry, I really hope you're listening, because I haven't heard from you in a long time. And I'm just hoping that you're at least learning, because 9 times out of 10, one of the things I have found is that as I give people information like Harry that challenges them, they usually go into a hole and they try to figure out, because remember, a common output from a progressive is, well, we'll just have to agree to disagree. And what that means, what that one statement means, is I don't have the ability to kill you or bury your argument at this point in time. So I'm going to go my way and figure out how I can. And 9 times out of 10, they never can, because you can't refute the truth. So what they do is they obfuscate, or they create ad hominem types of attacks. In other words, they try to find, to attack the messenger and not the narrative or the message, not the argument. They just basically find some dirt or what have you. And, you know, every one of us has probably got, has done things that they're either ashamed of, things that, we all make mistakes. This is the beauty of Christianity, and this is the beauty of learning and understanding that important relationship with Christ and moving forward. And I'm here to tell you, friends, that every one of us, if it was required to be perfect to become a Christian, if we had to be perfect to become an American citizen or anything in life, we'd all be doomed. So, anywho, let me just dive forward with where we're at. We just finished up with paragraph 64. And so we're now going into paragraph 65. And a lot of these paragraphs are just a sentence. And, you know, so that's why, you know, we kind of go through some of them, but some of them are kind of long. But anyway, what we have already covered and what we've covered, and I'm going to reread 64 because it was a great place to leave and or end, and it's a great place to lead off again. And so Madison was basically talking about, you know, the importance of, you know, working together and not working as single states. And he's been emphasizing this left and right, that the single state nullification is a perversion of the concept of the Constitution, of union and working together. So when we come back, right after these two breaks, right after these two promos, I should say, we will be back with paragraph 64, rereading that, and then we're going to go into 65 and on. And so right now we're on page 8 of 13, so we're well over half. We're going to make it, friends. Hang in there. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me get into, as I promised, let me get into this thing called Madison's Notes on Nullification, paragraph 64, to kick this off. And again, as we've set this up, Madison has really taken, I think, not necessarily a methodical approach. I think he was just trying to go into the different details. And so maybe he did have a methodical approach to this. But one of the things I noticed, because he's usually a short, succinct writer. He doesn't write books like yours truly. And the fact that he's gone down these different tacks or these different tracks in trying to help explain this, I find really refreshing, because this is the first time in my research of Madison where he's gone to such detail on one very specific topic. So, paragraph 64. It has been sufficiently shown from the language of the report, as has been seen, that the right in the states to interpose declarations and protests against unconstitutional acts of Congress had been denied. And so, because there were two states and trying to get the other states to do that, and that the reasoning in the resolutions was called for by that denial into the triumphant tone that which it is affirmed and reiterated that the resolutions must have been directed against what no one denied unless they were meant to assert the right of a single state to arrest and annul acts of the federal legislature. So in other words, he was basically stating that this was all about the states, and anybody that has gone down this path, you know, because no one's denied this unless they are really deliberately trying to say, you know, a single state can do this, which means that they've actually ignored the whole context of the syntax of the words state and states. Madison has been very, very clear. It requires states to create the union. It required states to create the basically ratify and then to create the general government. It wasn't about one state and then another state coming along with a similar idea and them all having their own different idea and kind of just kind of morphing into a single general government that originated from each of the states separately. No. This general government, this constitution, is a byproduct of the state delegates actually working together, arguing and hammering out all of the issues and then presenting it and it being accepted on the whole by the states, not by just one state. Even though it was accepted one state at a time, it still required states to empower it. It still required states to validate it. So moving on, he says, acts of the federal legislature make it proper to adduce that a proof of the fact that the declaratory right was denied, which, if it does not silence the advocates of nullification, must render every candid ear indignant to the repetition of the untruth. In other words, it is being denied that a single state cannot do this. So this is kind of why the obvious comes out, that if a single state in the union is not happy with the oppressive laws of the federal government, the two things it can do is it can petition for a convention of states, or it can actually secede. If it is willing to petition for a convention of states, why would that state not instead work together to interpose? So in other words, I think one of the reasons why, as I've, you know, working on a little analysis here in my head impromptu, it would kind of beg the argument that if a state is not willing to work with other states regarding interposition, that a state only wants to maintain its own perspective and its own sovereignty and is selfish and self-centered like South Carolina is being, then they feel that they're not necessarily, you know, obligated, or that they need to get the other states to go along with them. Now, we have a few states like that today, California is being one of them. And my point is that if you understand the uniformity concept in the union as well as in the Constitution, you have it's just like a marriage. But instead of it just being a husband and a wife, there is a marriage in this compact with 50 states. And you need to have a majority of those states. And this goes back to what Jefferson was saying, that you have to have at least a majority. So this is all really helping, you know, peel apart this concept of single state nullification. Yeah, you have a right to not be happy, and you have a right to not accept oppression. That right would be, if you want to go it alone, secede. But if you go down the path of secession, you have a greater chance and you're contributing to a greater danger of losing the Constitution while you are still a party to it and within the compact. Because just remember, when you secede, the only way to have a say over the Constitution and to be a part of the Union is you have to petition again to become a state, and then Congress will have to basically consider whether they're going to accept you or not. And I'm telling you, how many times is it reasonable for people to get re-engaged, remarried, rejoined, or unions and organizations to allow that to happen. I mean, you know, might be able to do it once or twice. You know what I mean? Might be able to, but I am here to tell you that most people are very apprehensive in rebonding with somebody that has become a drama queen, somebody that has, you know, acted out and gone off and done this, and then cooler heads have prevailed and said, you know what, we kind of made a mistake here. This is why Madison, going through in her position, says one must really understand the magnitude, you know, of the violations to understand the magnitude of the need for interposition and the remedy. That is what he was basically stating in the reports. So now moving forward, finally, yay, we're on paragraph 65. The proof is found in the record, in the recorded votes of a large and respectable portion of the House of Delegates at the time of passing the report. Now, this was in 1800. A motion, see the journal, offered at the close scene affirms, quote, that protest made by the legislature of this or any other state against particular acts of Congress as unconstitutional, accompanied with invitations to other states to join in such protest, are improper and unauthorized assumptions of power not permitted nor intended to be permitted to the state legislatures. And inasmuch as correspondent sentiments with the present have been expressed by those of our sister states who have acted on the resolutions of 1798, resolved, therefore, that the present assembly, convinced of the impropriety of the resolutions of the last assembly, deem it inexpedient further to act on the said resolutions. Now, so I wonder what state actually did this, but because he's not offering that. On this resolution, the votes according to the yeas and nays were 57 of the former and 98 of the latter. In other words, there were 57 that actually voted to actually kind of chastise and go after these states that were supporting the resolutions. 98 of them said, no, we can't do that. So in other words, one third to two thirds almost, because 50 and 98 being almost 100, here, and it really probably more of a one-third ratio, because that's what he points out here. Then, within the House of Delegates itself, more than one-third of the whole number denied the right of the state legislatures to proceed by declaratory acts merely against the constitutionality of acts of Congress, and affirm, moreover, that the states who had acted on the resolutions of Virginia entertained the same sentiments. With this testimony under the eye, it may surely be expected that it will never again be said that such a right had ever been denied, nor the pretext again resorted to that without such a denial, and the nullifying doctrine alone could satisfy the true meaning of the legislature. See the instructions to the members of Congress passed at the same session, which do not squint at the nullifying idea. This is paragraph 70. See also protest of the minority in Virginia legislature and the report of the COM and to be examined. And so I don't know what COM means, because he cut it off and then there's an expansion sign. I'm going to believe that that's the committee. Okay, so the report of the committee of Congress on the proceedings of Virginia to be examined for in journals. And so again, it's kind of broken as how we wrote it, or as how it's been written and preserved and presented. So that's what you'll read. But it seems to me he keeps on, or he's pointing out in this analysis, that there was a majority that still felt that the states had the right to interpose and did not deny the fact that they couldn't. Therefore, the need for nullification, as far as I see, that a single state would have that power, flies in that face, and actually is, as Madison puts it, it is a perversion of the concept of the union. It's a perversion of the concept of uniformity. And it has, so we've got this break now. So when we come back, we are going to bring in paragraph 71 and 72 moving forward, getting through this. And as we go through this, I'm hoping you're starting to recognize. I know he's dragging a dead horse. In some ways, I kind of feel like that is. But I believe every perspective that he's going to provide is going to be useful. Every time I do this, I always find the usefulness.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so as much as it may seem that the language that Madison is using is kind of supporting single state nullification, and even though he clearly, that would be a clear contradiction of what he's been stating in the same document, he goes on further because as he's kind of laying this out, this is what he says. And so paragraph 71, it has been asked whether every right has not its remedy and what other remedy exists under the government of the United States against usurpations of power, but a right in the states individually to annul and resist them. The plain answer is that and here it is, because he just kind of laid it out there that obviously the single states have this right to resist them. He's not actually saying that they don't, but they can't be a part of the union in doing so. That's the consistency. He didn't actually say that, but listen to what he says in this. The plain answer is that the remedy is the same under the government of the United States as under all other governments established and organized on free principles. The first remedy is in the checks provided among the constituted authorities. In other words, the checks and balances between the different branches of the federal government, and hopefully they're not colluding to take over and pervert like they're doing, because that was the intent of, you know, having these checks and balances to keep them from allowing the federal government to run amok and destroy the union. The next is the influence of the ballot boxes. In other words, okay, now we have to start replacing Congress so that but here's the problem, folks, that not only a part of this violation of the checks and balances, they've been violating the powers by using unconstitutional powers to buy votes. Congress should never, and no legislature should ever be able to say, if you elect me, I will give you something from somebody, especially when that something or that that issue, that matter, that thing that they're talking about, healthcare, food, welfare, it doesn't matter. Whatever type of social service, social engineering, it doesn't matter. If it's not enumerated in the Constitution, they can't even promise that. And they ought to be hung, or at least they ought to be removed and denied public service for the rest of their lives, because any public servant should understand that going into government, they only have these enumerated powers within the Constitution. And if it's not within the enumerated Constitution, they are talking actually treasonous by violating the Constitution and granting a power to themselves that has not been granted by the parties of the Constitution. Okay, so the next is the influence of the ballot box. So we want to remove them. And those who are making these promises, like Obama and everybody else, Hillary, they actually have committed treason by offering things that are unconstitutional and willing to actually violate their oath of office in stating so before they get elected. The appeal lies, and here we go here, then that failing, okay, so he basically says influence of the ballot box and hustings, that again failing, the appeal lies, this is the third and final appeal or remedy, the appeal lies to the power that made the Constitution and can, as he said before in a previous paragraph, explain, amend, or remake it. Now, what is explain? Explain is interposing. Amending is the constitutional process in Article 5 of petitioning to basically amend and or remake. So the second two of these remedies is literally throwing the Constitution aside and saying, we're opening up the Constitution. Now, actually, technically, an amendment can actually be provided via Congress. So to be fair, you know, amending the Constitution does not mean that it's going down an Article 5 path. But nine times out of 10, you know, to get the states what they want, they typically have to start petitioning and amending. And that's the last thing we want to do. We don't want to give them more power. And we definitely don't want to take away the necessary power that they have within the Constitution. So the explaining is literally the only thing that actually makes sense that will actually solve the problem. Remaking the Constitution is a death nail. There is no way liberty will survive because of the ignorance and the illiteracy of the public. So I agree with the critics of the convention that there's just no way we can survive this. There's just no way. However, explaining it and going down the path of interposition, as far as I'm concerned, opens the doors and opens the windows so people can actually begin to understand the Constitution and become literate and prepare us to actually maybe move down the path in years to come of actually making improvements upon this Constitution to based on enlightenment, not based on feelings and debasement, and be able to actually make this Constitution and this Republic even stronger to go a millennia without ever having to face these types of dangers of destruction that we're facing today. Should, and going on in paragraph 72, should this resort also fail and the power usurped be sustained in its oppressive exercise on a minority by a majority, the final course to be pursued by the minority must be a subject of calculation in which the degree of oppression, the means of resistance, the consequences of its failure, and consequences of success must be elements. Does not this view of the case equally belong to every one state, Virginia, for example? Should the constituted authorities of the state unite in usurping oppressive powers? Should the constitute body fail to arrest the progress of evil through the elective process according to the forms of the Constitution? And should the authority which is above that of the Constitution, the states, the majority of the people inflexibly support the oppression inflicted on the minority, nothing would remain for the minority but to rally to its reserved rights for every citizen has reserved rights as exemplified in declarations prefixed to most of the state constitutions, and to decide between acquiescence and resistance according to the calculation above stated. Those who question the analogy in this respect between the two cases, however different they may be in some other respects, must say, as some of them, with a boldness truly astonishing, do say, that the Constitution of the United States, which as such and under that name was presented to and accepted by those who ratified it, which has been so deemed and so called by those living under it for nearly half a century, and as such sworn to by every officer state as well as federal, is yet no constitution but a treaty, a league, or at most a confederacy among nations as independent and sovereign in relation to each other as before the charter which calls itself a constitution was formed. The same zealots must again say, as they do, like a boldness and incongruity, that the government of the United States, which has been so deemed and so called from its birth to the present time, which is organized in the regular forms of representative governments, and like them operates directly on individuals represented, and whose laws are declared to be supreme, the supreme law of the land, with a physical force in the government for executing them, which is the militia of the states, is yet no government but a mere agency, a power of attorney. I'm highlighting this because he is really putting it out there that this Constitution, as it has been created and the parties of it have basically created, a power of attorney, revocable at the will of any of the parties granting it. There you go. So all of these people who have said that Lincoln was right, that states couldn't secede, he's absolutely wrong. But understand the ramifications of divorce, that you may rue the day that you gave up too quickly. I believe we owe it to every member and every party in this union that we must work together and in unison and methodically. Republic review is not a difficult process. Republic review is a methodical process of obtaining full compliance to the Constitution as it sits in its organic form. And when I say organic, that means the first seven articles of the Constitution as well as the 27 amendments, and only those, not these injected annotations in the annotated Constitution. That is not constitutional. There's never been an amendment granted to the federal government to allow them to utilize the court or any other process to aggrandize their powers, roles, or responsibilities, period. It requires 3/4 of the states to give them the authority to do anything. And therefore, the states have the power to actually force the federal government or remove each party, each individual politician or judge from the federal government because they failed to fulfill their oath of office in supporting the Constitution and, in essence, supporting their own agenda and rebellion against the Constitution. That's Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, my friends. Anyway, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.